this on. Okay, last week on Wednesday night, we had gone through a lengthy explanation of the whole concept of serving. And I pointed out to you that the Apostle Paul listed a large number of people in the 16th chapter of Romans that he considered worthy of recognition for their serving. So, remember, we're in the series now on prescriptions for living, which I borrowed from Reuben Ewart and his website, Living the Truth. And we're focusing on reproducing godly skills, also his emphasis. And the last skill that we looked at was the skill of serving. So now the question tonight is, how do I reproduce servants? And we're going to follow the same procedure we have with each one of these, but the repetition will help us. First of all, I have to be a servant. And God called Moses, my servant. So if you go to the book of Exodus, first of all, we'll start out in the 33rd chapter and verse 11. And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face as a man speaketh unto his friend, and he turned again into the camp. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle. And here we have Moses, the servant of the Lord. Then if you go to the 17th chapter of Exodus 17, verses 9 and 10, we read this. Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in mine hand. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. You know the story. As long as they held up Moses' arms, victory was theirs. So basically what I want to talk about here is that Moses was a servant, and he was training Joshua to be a servant when he was no longer there. I think one of the great failures in the Independent Fundamental Baptist movement is the general failure of Independent Fundamental Baptist pastors to train their replacement. Most have a tendency to just simply either wait till they die or wait till they, quote, feel led, which I don't think is a possibility. But whenever they want to leave, they say, I feel led to leave. And then what happens is the church is left with trying to replace, and many times they have no idea. They haven't been trained as a church how to replace. Before I left Kentucky, what I did was I met with the deacons in the church, and I went through 1 Timothy chapter 3, and I said, okay, here are the qualifications for a pastor. And I said, if you guys are going to replace me when I'm gone, I hope you'll look for these qualities in a pastor. I've tried to practice them in my life. I failed on occasionally, but I've tried to generally practice these, and I hope you'll look for that. Well, Moses assigned Joshua duties, and the assignment of those duties or responsibility were part of his training as a servant. And if Moses said to do it and Joshua said, I'm not going to do it, do it yourself, then Joshua probably would not have a book named after him, would not have led the people into the promised land. So he was a man who was known for doing what his leader told him to do. Moses had a program for training servants. And the question is, why don't our Christian colleges and universities have such a program? I've never seen one. I've even taught in Christian colleges and universities. We never had any programs on teaching people to serve. So Joshua did as Moses had said unto him, Exodus 17:10. So God told Moses to train Joshua. And if you look at the 17th chapter of Exodus, again, there's an interesting statement in there. He tells Moses how to train Joshua. So in the 17th chapter, and in verse 14, notice what he says. He says, and the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in a book, and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua. For I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. So he says here, I want you to write down the truth. You write down the words that I'm giving you. And then I want you to rehearse these in Joshua's ear. And why did he say that? Well, because he was training Joshua to take over the leadership of the people of Israel. So Numbers chapter 11, 28, God again says, Joshua, the servant of Moses. So now God has begun to recognize that Joshua is the servant and that he will be qualified to take over. So many times people will say, well, what qualifies you to be a pastor? Well, you have to go to such and such a school, you have to graduate, and you have to be well known in this, and you have to be then you go into this church and you take over and lead. Nobody ever says you have to be a servant. Have you ever read the four Gospels? I assume you have. Jesus told his disciples when they were bickering and quibbling over who was going to be greatest in the kingdom, he said, you guys got it backwards. You want to be on top, then you got to go down. The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. So Jesus said, the greatest one is the one who serves. It took me a while as a young preacher to catch on to that because I wasn't the way I was trained. I was trained in a good, independent, fundamental Baptist school that trained me right in a lot of areas. I have no complaint about that. One thing they didn't train me in, and that was that I should be a servant to others. That was my primary responsibility. I finally caught on, however. It took me 10 or 15 years, but I finally caught on, and I learned this principle, that when I serve the man of God, I am serving the God of man. And so I took the position that it was an honor to serve on any pastor's staff. If he called me and said, I want you to serve on my staff, I considered it an honor, and I've tried to maintain that attitude. Moses could train a servant because Moses was a servant. Number two, I have to tell people about serving. It's one of the things I'm doing here tonight. I have to tell people about serving. Moses gave instructions to Joshua. He gave instructions to Caleb. He gave instructions to the congregation. And he told them that they should serve the Lord. Matter of fact, in Exodus 23:25, he speaks to them and he says, and you shall serve the Lord your God. In Deuteronomy 6:13, thou shalt fear the Lord thy God and serve him. So Moses hears from God, he passes it on to the people, and he says, God said to tell you that he said that you were to serve him. And that's what Moses did. So if I'm going to be a servant, if I'm going to teach serving, I have to be a servant, and then I must tell others about serving. Then thirdly, I have to show the skill of serving. I have to demonstrate it. But Moses did this. One of the most interesting patterns, I like to look at patterns in the Bible. One of the most interesting patterns, if you read Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, if you read those four, you'll find this pattern. And God commanded Moses, and Moses did as God commanded. You'll find that pattern all through those books. So how do I show the skill of serving? Real simple. First of all, I look for unmet needs in the area in which I can meet them. I look around. I do this all the time. I guess you probably do too. But every day I start my day off by praying, saying, now Lord, place in my path today somebody that I can help, somebody that I can serve, somebody that I can do something for without expecting anything in return. Now there are two kinds of unmet needs. There are those needs that require specialized skills needed to help others. The Bible refers many times to artificers, to woodmakers, to various people with various areas. Those people themselves would be the only ones that could help somebody else learn those skills. You couldn't bring in a shepherd and say, here, build this building, if you weren't a mason, you weren't a stonemason. So some specialized skill. For example, when I get in the back of an ambulance, I've had over 2,600 hours of classroom training to be able to do everything that's required to be done in the back of that ambulance. That's a specialized skill. And so it's technical. So there are some areas of unmet needs that we can help in that require specialized skills. But there are also areas that require no specialty at all. And would you believe this is the larger group? Most of the needs that people face on a daily basis can be met by individuals who have no specialized training. One lady came to me one day and she said, well, I can't do anything to serve the Lord anymore. She said, I'm pretty much unable to get out. I got to stay. I had a mild stroke and all I can do is get around the house in this walker and there's nothing I can do to serve the Lord. I said, sure there is. And she said, well, what is it? I said, call your pastor. Tell him you want a list of all the shut-ins in the church. Their church is running about 1,000. I said, you want a list of all the shut-ins in the church and you want the church to provide cards from the pastor and stamps to go on those cards, and you're going to have to write a note on the pastor's card to all the people that are shut in and do that once a month and be an encouragement to them. Well, I never thought of that. Of course you didn't. One fellow said, you know, I just don't know what I can. I don't have any specialized skills. He said, I just don't know what I can do to help people. I said, what do you do for a living? He said, well, I'm a mechanic. I said, why don't you call the pastor and ask him to need some work done on the buses? You know? People just don't think. Of course, I know that excludes us. We're thinkers here, but there are a lot of people that just don't think. You know that? They just don't think. So, those that require no specialty, a lot of people can do those. And then fourth, I must involve others in the serving process. That's my coaching responsibility there. See, I am a servant. I've told them about serving. And I have shown them how I serve, and now I've got to get them out there serving. So Moses did this with Joshua. Paul did it with Timothy. Jesus did it with the 12. After he trained them for a while, he sent them out on their own. And after I've demonstrated both the attitude and the actions that should be carried out in meeting needs, that I can work with others in a type of training format. Now there's some principles I think you need to look at whenever you're teaching people, and I want to give those principles to you tonight. Some of them we've already gone over, and this may seem repetitive, but it's a whole different part of the message, so let me give it to you. Here's some principles to remember. Principle number one, I cannot pass on a skill I do not have. I cannot pass on a skill I do not have. So to reproduce the skill of serving others, I must have the skill of serving others. And I tell you what I've done over the years to help myself in this area is I have watched people who serve others. And I have tried to spend as much time with them as I could to see if I could pick up some tips from them on how to be a servant. In addition, I've read a lot of books that focus on meeting the needs of others. And by the way, if you go to a Christian bookstore, you're not going to find a lot of books written on how to have a servant's heart. I've attended seminars at conferences on how to help those in need. Matter of fact, I gave a seminar once to New England Association of Christian Schools. The title of the seminar was Every Teacher, a Servant. And I talked in there about how the teachers needed to see themselves as servants of the students, not as lords over the students. So in all my ministry, I've worked at trying to be a help to others, edifying others, doing what I could to help people in areas where they were in need. Now, the question is, have I ever failed? Oh, you bet. I sure have. But, you know, instead of getting discouraged when you fail at helping others, you can remember what several of my teachers told me. One of my teachers would no longer remember me. I've been communicating with her sister. But she used to say this at Tennessee Temple. She'd say, Guy, it's better to try and fail than not to try at all. And so I memorized that, and I kept it before me. So, you see, I can't pass on a skill I do not have. So then the second thing, if you're going to teach people, is I have to be a willing teacher. I have to be a willing teacher. Now, I don't know if you've thought about this or not, but if you're going to teach people, it takes a lot more discipline for you as the teacher than it does for the student. And a lot of people just don't want to engage in the discipline of trying to develop spiritual skills in other people. The reason for that is that other people are not all the same, and it's sometimes difficult to get them to respond properly. So teaching should be a sacrificial endeavor, not a self-promotion endeavor. My wife and I were sitting at home not too long ago, and we were looking back over all the training we've had, the teachers we had. We were talking about the teachers, and one of the criticisms of Christian colleges and universities is their teachers are not qualified. And we were talking about it, and she and I both agreed that the most qualified teachers we had, the most effective teachers we had, the most dedicated teachers we had, were not in state universities and colleges. They were in Christian colleges. I had some poor teachers in Christian colleges, but the majority of them were really excellent teachers. The majority of poor teachers I had were in colleges and universities supported by the state. I can count on maybe one hand out of something like 50 professors I've studied under in colleges and universities all across the country. I can count on one hand the good teachers in the state universities. It would take me several hands to count the good teachers at Tennessee Temple when I was there. So arrogance of the teacher is going to be acid to the learning process. Arrogance of the teacher is going to be acid to the learning process. Students pick up quicker on arrogance and pride than they do anything else in a teacher. Not too long ago, I had the privilege of working with somebody who's wanting to go online. I've been appointed as a preceptor for the Mountain Lakes region, so people that are coming up and they want to go online, I can ride with them, watch them do their skills, and I can evaluate them and either sign them off or tell them they need more practice in them, whatever. So I was working with a young fella, and he said, I came down here to ride with you tonight, but he said, I'm scared. He said, you have so much experience and you have so much training. And he said, hold on just a second. Let's go over here to the counter. And I said, you drink coffee? He said, yeah. I said, well, you've already made a plus with me already. So I said, let's get a cup of coffee and let's fix that coffee and let's sit down and go over your paperwork and let's talk about these skills that you want to do tonight. He said, okay. So we did. And by the time we got through going through the skills, I said, okay, now if this situation occurred, what would you do? He said, this. I said, okay. But here's what the sheet says, and you left out this right here, so just go back over this and try to remember that pattern right there. The state's got it all written out here for you. And I said, go over it. And I said, now, when you get in the back of the ambulance, well, first of all, when we get on the scene, you're going to do the total assessment. I'm not going to do anything except listen to what you say. You're going to tell me what the patient needs. He said, well, what if the patient needs ALS? I'm only BLS. I said, then that's your right to determine that. It's your responsibility to determine. This patient is above my level. You need to take the patient. I said, then I'll take the patient. That goes on your form too. See? So by the time we got through the night, we had three calls. We got through the third call, and I called him over there, and it's like 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And I said, okay, now, Ben, I got a question for you. He said, what? I said, how rough was I on you? He said, I never thought it was like you weren't there. He said, the only thing you ever said was if I did something really good. You said, hey, great, Ben, very good, good job. And then you got in the ambulance and you said, okay, Ben, you're in charge. What do you want me to do? So he said, I told you what to do and you did it. So I said, it wasn't really as bad as you thought it was going to be, was it? He said, no. So I said, okay. So the teacher who's going to be domineering and dramatized and I'm in charge and I'm proud of what I am, that teacher is going to immediately turn students off. But the teacher who says, hey, I'm right here to help you. Go ahead and do your job. Let me know if you need me. That encourages. So right now there are about 20 or 25 people who are serving in the back of the ambulances that I've trained over the last 15 years. And everyone that I've trained, 100%, have gotten online and are still serving. Here's the best part. Half of them are training people under them. And they're coming up. So when I step out of the back of the ambulance and I'm too old to ride back there anymore, there are going to be a lot of people that I've helped that are going to be replacing me. You stop and think about it. The only life worth living is the one in which you serve. So helping others, serving others, meeting their needs, very important. But training others to serve is vital. And I don't know, if you see yourself passing off the scene, I remember Johnny Bench, when he realized that he was not going to be able to catch much longer, instead of worrying about somebody taking his place, he looked for somebody to take his place. And then trained that new catcher. And that new catcher became the first line catcher. And Johnny Bench became the substitute. Arrogance and pride are acid to the learning process. So a great legacy that you can leave behind when you die is a host of people that you have taught to serve the Lord by serving others. Every once in a while I get a letter from somebody I trained at Landmark Baptist College. Every once in a while I get a letter from somebody that went through our school here. And they say, I want to thank you and your staff for all you did to help us serve the Lord. So you got to have the skill, you got to tell the skill, and then I've got to have the patience to engage others in the serving and lovingly, the serving process. I got to do this with a loving evaluation. I can't be cracking the whip. Now, I want to give some warnings to those who are passing on skills to others. Warning number one, no one will do the same job the exact way the teacher does. No one will do the same job the exact way the teacher does. Now, I want to give you what I call a confusion principle here. Don't confuse reproduction with duplication. That makes sense? Don't confuse reproduction with duplication. If you try to duplicate yourself, you squash the individuality of the other person. If you try to reproduce yourself, you recognize the individuality and let that person function. So you have to be patient with the student's methods. One student said to me the other night in the back of the ambulance, he said, "I'm not doing this exactly the way you do it." I said, "Doesn't matter. As long as you don't hurt the patient, you get the job done. You don't have to do it exactly like I do it." So no one will do the same job the exact way the teacher does it. Secondly, no one will develop at the same rate as another person. No one will develop at the same rate as another person. Another confusion principle here. Ready for this? Don't confuse developmental delay with rebellion. Don't confuse developmental delay with rebellion. Be patient with the student's timing in the process. Take some students a little longer. I was working with a kid not too long ago, a sharp kid, has a high average, graduated from a prominent college, and started taking his training as a paramedic. We're in the back of the ambulance working, and he said, "You know, I've tried this several times and I just don't get it." And I said, "Well, it's a technique thing." I said, "We get back to the squad room, which is a matter, we had an unconscious patient and the doctor told us to intubate, and he tried to intubate and couldn't do it, so I went ahead and did the intubation. And we got back to the squad room and I pulled out the dummy, not me, you know, one of those mannequins, I pulled out the mannequin, and we got the laryngoscope out and all the other stuff, the tubes and everything, and I said, "Okay, let's pretend we're in the back of the ambulance. The patient just went into cardiac arrest. We've got to get this tube in there so we can breathe for him." So he went over it, and he said, "I'm just not getting it." And I said, "Well," I said, "hold it like this," and I said, "when you go in, instead of doing this," I said, "go in with an upward motion like that." And so he went in with an upward motion. He said, "I can see the vocal cord." I said, "Well, then thread them." So he did, and we got it. So now the next time we have a place where we need somebody to be intubated, maybe he can do it. But we just practiced it over and over, just went over and over. So don't confuse developmental delay with rebellion. Then thirdly, no one will respond to constructive criticism the same way as somebody else. No one will respond to constructive criticism the same way as somebody else. So what you have to do is you have to evaluate every student individually. You have to find out what works with each person. Because if you're trying to reproduce skills in different people, each person may be different. Be patient with the student's responses to your criticism. The student may have grown up in a home where he was constantly criticized with parents, and so he has an immediate negative response to criticism, whether it's positive or negative. So you have to learn to work with that. So it's another confusion principle. Don't confuse frustration with indifference. Don't confuse frustration with indifference. Because I saw that my student was frustrated, but he wanted to learn the skill. He wasn't indifferent to it. So we went back and processed it and went back and practiced it. So I assigned responsibility. I talked him through the process. I listened to his concerns, and I evaluated him positively. I've worked with some people. I was working with a fellow the other day who was evaluating a call that I took, and all he did was just attack, 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 attack. So when he got through, I felt like I'd been beaten down. And then the next day, I was with a student who made a mistake in a run. Didn't injure anybody, but so my approach was, "Hey, let's critique this run and you tell me what you'd do differently if you had it to do over again. He picked up on his own mistake. So we learned, but I didn't hit him with it like that. So I've got to have the skill, tell the skill, show the skill, and then I must be willing to release the student to his own actions. So now I'm a coach on the sideline, watching him work and reinforcing his positive actions and reviewing his negative actions. So we want to be patient with the person's efforts to implement what he has learned, and it's got to be implemented into his individual framework. So don't confuse, another confusion principle, don't confuse his personal difference with personal failure. Don't confuse his personal difference with personal failure. I had one guy I worked with, the way he does IVs, I could just never do it the way he does it. That's not the way I taught him, but he has devised a way that he does IVs and he gets them. You know? So I'm saying, well, it's no big deal. And once the student's released, he should never be judged by this statement. That's not how I would do that. But he should be evaluated by a previously agreed upon biblical guidelines for serving God by serving others. I work with a fine group of EMS providers. And one of the CEOs that I work for, a couple of them are really great people. This one's good. He's very sensitive, very patient, very consistent, very principled. And if there's a problem, he comes to you and says, hey, let's review that last run you had. But he has a supervisor under him who's the opposite. And the supervisor under him is responsible to review all of our reports. The big problem is that with the supervisor under him, there's no room for individuality. And I had a confrontation with him. He said, you shouldn't have done that this way. You should have done that this way. I said, look, I want you to stop right there and I want to tell you something. If you tell me that everything that happens in the back of the ambulance when you're on a run is reported on your pre-hospital care report, I'll call you a liar. I said, you can't possibly report everything on there. I said, I did what I could to help this patient. The patient refused my help. And he said, well, it's my way or the highway. And so I said, then I'll take the highway. I'm out of here. You got my resignation. Because I'll never write a PCR the exact way he writes it. And he doesn't think anybody's right but him. You know, a genuine coach has a standard. I don't know if you've ever read the biography of Coach Wooden, led UCLA for so many years, basketball. Coach Wooden says, I have standards, and he said, if you don't meet the standards, you don't play. But within the framework of the standards is room for you to be an individual. One of his players, one of his top players, scored more points than anybody else. Coach Wooden had a rule that you couldn't play if you didn't get your hair cut. You couldn't have your hair down over your ears. And a player came one day to practice at the beginning of the season, and he had his hair down over his ears. And Coach Wooden went to him and called him by name. I won't call his name, but he's now a professional basketball player. And Coach Wooden told him, he said, you have to get your hair cut. That's one of my standards. And he said, but it's not my standard. And he said, I choose to wear my hair this way. And he said, I want you to know that's fine. You have the right to make that decision. And he said, we'll see you. He put him off the team. So about a week later, the boy comes back with his hair cut. Says, Coach, said, I want to ask you to forgive me. He said, I should never have had that kind of attitude. And he said, well, maybe next year you can play for me. Come see me next year. So the guy sat out a year, came back the next year, haircut and everything, played for Wooden. And when he was interviewed on a national network not too long ago, they asked him what the most impressive lesson that he learned was in all of his life. And he said, when Coach Wooden let me know who was in charge, he said that was the most important lesson. He said, of all the coaches I've played for, he said, I have more respect for him than anybody else because he was the most consistent gentleman I ever knew. Well, standards. But he allowed for individuality, but only so much individuality. So, you know, there's some guidelines for reproducing godly skills, and you and I have looked at those four major guidelines. We've talked about these. We've talked about developing the skill of prayer, developing the skill of speaking the truth, developing the skill of giving thanks, developing the skill of forgiving others, developing the skill of edifying others, developing the skill of active submission, developing the skill of listening, and developing the skill of serving. Now, Lord willing, next Wednesday night I want to look at the skill of not comparing oneself with others. We live in a society that forces us to fit into molds. And sadly enough, that mentality has bled over into many fundamental churches. And if you don't fit into a particular mold, then you don't fit in, you know, to the group. And where does that come from? Well, we're going to talk about where it comes from. I think one of the greatest compliments that I ever got from my wife was, "Honey, thank you for not pressing me into a traditional pastor's wife mold." And when you do that, what you do is you destroy a person's individuality. And when you read the Bible, one of the things that you find coming out all the time is the individual characteristics of the great servants of God. Moses wasn't like Paul. Neither Paul nor Moses was like John. And you look, you say, "Daniel there, there's Daniel." Yeah, but Daniel was a whole lot different than Joseph. You know, you got all these great, godly, spiritual people that God used in a very special way. Well, let's stand for prayer. Father, thank you for your blessings in our lives. We thank you for loving us. Thank you for saving us. Thank you for giving us a life worth living. And thank you for the principles that we've looked at from the Word of God that guide us in developing these spiritual skills. Help us to look for those who are willing to be taught so that we can pass these skills on to others. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. What page?